Welcome to our Spiritual Spotlight series, where we explore the vast and mysterious world of spirituality. Whether you're seeking guidance on your spiritual journey, interested in learning more about different spiritual practices and beliefs, or simply looking for inspiration to deepen your connection with the divine, then this is a show just for you. Join us as we delve into topics such as mindfulness, meditation, manifestation, energy healing, and much more. Our aim is to provide a safe and inclusive space for all listeners to explore their spirituality and connect with like-minded individuals. So grab a cup of tea, get comfortable, and let's journey together on the path of spiritual awakening. Hello, everyone. Welcome to our Spiritual Spotlight series. Today, I am joined by Courtney Boyer. She's a relationship and sexuality expert and the author of Not Tonight, Honey, Why Women Don't Want Sex and What We Can Do About It. She's a trained therapist, certified life coach, and a certified level 2 Reiki practitioner. Courtney, thank you so much for coming on the Spiritual Spotlight series. I'm so happy you're here.
Oh, thanks, Rachel. I'm excited to be here.
I'm also excited that Courtney is in Germany. My dream to go there.
Yay. Come visit.
I'm definitely going to come visit. So let me talk about, let's just jump right into it. So sexual empowerment and pleasure, Not Tonight, Honey, your book delves deep into the reasons behind women's struggles with sexual desire. In your opinion, maybe what are some of the pivotal factors that have caused a disconnect between women and their own bodies?
Yeah. Where do I start?
I think start from the beginning of time.
Once upon a time, no, in all honesty, though, that's really what happens is like from the beginning is girls are inundated with these messages of what's a good girl and what's expected of them. And not saying that boys don't also get that same messaging, but a lot of that messaging for girls is around our bodies, our appearance, our ability to please and to serve other people. And so we're not ever really connecting with our body or connecting with this idea of pleasure at a young age.
I would totally agree with that. I mean, and I think as a male, and maybe I'm not sure if this is something males, I feel like are promoted to, be in touch with your sexual, you know, prowess. And women, it's more like, no, like you need to be like subdued and be a mom and be a virgin. And, you know, it's very interesting. Not so much.
Yeah. In the book, I talk about that. I coined the term sexual gatekeeper syndrome. And this is something that I see that girls, I love your face right now.
I Sorry, love that I term alone, sexual gatekeeping. Like, go ahead, please.
Yes. No, like the sexual, it's this idea that women are girls, teenagers are, it's our job as the gatekeepers of sexual behavior. So it's expected, of course, men want sex all of the time. So of course, they're always going to want to say yes. So somebody has to be the bigger person to shut sex down. And so that has typically fallen on women. Yeah. And that's where women are seen as either prudes or sluts, depending on where their, you know, gatekeeping status is.
And prudes or sluts, even within the same relationship that they're currently
absolutely.
In. Like it's a, well, why don't you do this? And why don't you act like this? And it's like,
100%. What? Mixed messaging. Yep.
So let me ask you this. How do you believe that families, especially parents, can foster an environment where conversations about sex and pleasure are open, healthy, and devoid of shame?
Yeah, I think it's just one by modeling. So that's one of the best ways that kids see is if you're prioritizing your own pleasure. And a lot of people, when they hear the word pleasure, they just assume we're talking about sexual pleasure. Mm. And one of the things that is really, I think, important to remember is that pleasure is just a concept in general, and it can be applied to any category. So if you are taking pleasure in your morning coffee, or you are, you know, taking a pleasurely stroll down the road, but we're just not encouraged to do that. We're very focused. We're very driven. Like, we don't have time for these things. You know, pleasure is really seen as a distraction and really occasionally as a reward, but it is never seen as the path.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of like that you just brought this up. It's like overachievement. So you've shared how your deeply personal journey from striving for external validation to seeking a more authentic self-worth. How did maybe spirituality and energy work come into play during this transformative place in your life?
Yeah. I mean, I did all like the right things. So I
like that. I got the right things. Society said.
Yes, right, exactly. Like I grew up very religious. So I was married at 22. I had my first kid. I had all three kids by the time I was 30. I had two master's degrees by the time I was 30. Like I just was your quintessential overachiever. And honestly, that left me burned out, anxious, depressed, and just really lonely. And I started realizing that we're kind of told a lie. When I say kind of, I mean really told a lie in terms of what success and fulfillment is. And so then I started looking for fulfillment in other places outside of achievement.
Yeah. So, I mean, you just brought this up that you were a mom of times three before 30. So the myth of being a super mom, as someone who has chased the super mom status, what can you tell maybe a young woman or a new mother about the pressures of trying to have it all and the importance of, like you said, self-care?
Yeah, it's a myth. Like you can't have it all. You can, Yeah. I mean, we can pretend, right? No, let's not pretend. I don't like pretending. I mean, it's just, it's really this idea that continues, you know, women to cash in on the commercialization and the commodification and all of these words that, you know, have us try to show up and be somebody that we're really not. And it's, you can have elements of it, quote, all, but not all at the same time. And that doesn't mean that you're a failure. That just means that it's about seasons and accepting things that are supposed to be in your life at certain times.
I love that, seasons. I mean, I'm somebody who, I'm a registered nurse. I run a doctor's office. I'm a mom. I'm very spiritual, but it is a struggle to find balance. And I feel like a lot of it comes to society's pressures and I should be doing this. I should be doing this.
What do you mean? Of course.
You know, and I love the idea of, I like the, like what you just said, taking a pleasure walk, like pleasurably walk. Like I know after this, I'm going for a walk and I'm like, I'm going to equate it to pleasure.
Yes. Find the things that like one of the, my small pleasures is watching leaves fall. I know, like this is my favorite time of year. There's something like magical for me about watching leaves fall. Yeah. And so when I see that, like I smile, I pay attention to like my breathing. I notice that like, I just feel happier. And that's an example of creating what I call a pleasure practice in the book, is finding those little things that bring you pleasure and incorporating that consistently into your life. And then you have a practice.
That is amazing. I'm going to be doing that.
Good.
Yes. So let me ask you this. What, like, I know that you had two master's degree before the age of 30. Like, what made you desire to want to be like a relationship and sexuality expert?
Yeah. Well, I didn't start out that way.
You're like, no.
I wanted to be a lawyer because I wanted to help people.
I love the transition. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then I read The Women's Room in college, and that totally changed my life. And I started really looking into gender and sexuality and realizing like, this is really messed up. Like women are like really given like the short end of the stick here. And so I wanted to just be a part of the solution. And so then I told my parents, I'm not going to study law. I'm going to study sex, which, you know, makes every parent super proud. And so that's kind of what propelled me. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be a therapist at first because I didn't think I was qualified for that. And so then I worked as a sexuality educator for a little bit. And then people were drawn to come to me and ask me these really personal questions. And I just didn't have the tools. So that's what led me into sex therapy and traditional therapy.
Wow. That's amazing. I love the fact that you started as wanting to be a lawyer.
I
think I also started as I wanted to be a lawyer and then I became a nurse. So I was like, It's how our paths diverge.
Exactly. Yep.
So with the blend of science and spirituality, your credentials, and everyone, I recommend you check out her website, and she has a lot of credentials, which are all amazing. So they reveal an intricate blend of Western medicine and alternative methods like Reiki. How do you find these different practices converge in your approach to women's sexual empowerment?
I think so. One of the things that I really was like looking back now is when I was in graduate school, the gold standard was cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. And so that was like everything could be fixed in your mind. Mm-hmm. As long as you thought differently, then you would feel differently and then you would behave differently. And like that was a very logical. And what I would find with so many of my clients is that they would get to a point that they just couldn't get past. And I was like, I don't get it. And at the same time, my dad started getting sick and he was just, you know, when you see somebody that you love, like deteriorating and you're like, man, I just like, I can't help them. But I know that he has this lot of unresolved trauma and like started realizing that like, you know, the body keeps the score. And so we have these energies that are stuck in us and we can pretend like they don't exist, but they do. And so what I realized is until you get the body on, like you will not be, you know, achieve the results that you're really desiring. And so that was my focus, is how do I integrate the mind and the body in a way that feels authentic to me?
And that is so true. The body does keep the score. I don't know if you've ever read The Emotion Code, and how I'm sure you've read a lot of the books and about like how your thoughts create your reality. And then, you know, how that gets embedded into your cellular tissue. And then it, I feel like it manifests. And like you said, it's stored trauma. Like it comes up in addiction. It comes up in overachieving. It comes up in so many different ways. And I would imagine with your background, now you probably identify your clients. You're like, oh, you need some energy work.
I'm always a fan of energy work. Yes,
absolutely. So am I. It's fascinating. Like how, you know, even rashes, you know, like can pop up on someone's body from, you know, they have anxiety and it's
absolutely stress. Yep.
Mm-hmm. How we manage stress. That's a whole other topic.
Right. It is. Yes.
So like you just brought up that about your father, you lost your father in 2017 and you mentioned realizing that you've been sold a lie of the definition of success. Can you maybe elaborate on how this experience shifted your perspective on what truly matters in life?
Yeah. So my dad was like the quintessential example of success. So he grew up in a very physically and emotionally abusive household, was kicked out when he was a kid, and just like worked his way up through, you know, the ranks, but had a lot of severe PTSD and thought he could outrun, like literally, like he was a marathon runner, like that he could outrun his demons. And he tried everything. He tried sports. He tried success. He tried food. He tried, you know, ultimately painkillers. And it just like it was just a perfect example of you can't outrun those. You have to face them. And so I think if I knew what I knew now, back then, I feel much more equipped to be able to like help him. Obviously, you know, people choose what they want to, their own path. But seeing that of what that epitome of success looked like on the outside, but yet knowing that he was so broken on the inside, that to me was like, there's something missing here. Like that's not okay.
And have you found that in your own personal life that you've been able to shift that perspective to really feel like, I know you said like when you were chasing this married, 22 kids, master's degree and felt lonely. Do you feel now that with all of these tools that you have, that you feel more fulfilled inside?
Yeah. I mean, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't struggle with like that outward expectation of like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm not as successful, you know, quote unquote, as to be. And then that's when I, you know, engage in those times, I have to really ground myself in gratitude and remember like what's important and reflect on, okay, what are the things that are a priority in my life? And why am I getting sucked into this? You know, you're not making enough money, or you don't have enough sales, or you don't have enough, you know, credentials or whatever it is. So
have you seen your credentials, ma'am?
But isn't that insane? Like, yes, I know I have a lot of credentials, but like, I still am like,
I'm the same way. I 100% resonate with what you're saying, because it's like, I mean, you and I are both like, you're a coach and you're in the online space and you're in person space. And it is interesting how people can judge you based upon, oh, well, you're actually missing, you know what I mean? But then other people present themselves as no credentials and yet act like experts because they've got a good marketing team.
100%. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's a hard balance. And I'm going to ask you this because I suffer. Yep. I suffer from the same thing, and I call it like shiny thing syndrome, where I'm like, "Ooh, if I get this one more tool, ooh, if I get this one more tool," it's a hard thing to be like, "We've done enough."
Enough, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We've done enough. So let me ask you this. In the mind-body connection from NLP to EMDR, your training encompasses a range of techniques aimed at mental well-being. How have these practices influenced your understanding and approach towards sexual intimacy and relationships?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the thing that comes up to me is the word intention. Mm. And so being really cognizant of how powerful intention is, yes, regardless of what modality you're using on your healing path, or even more applicable to just everyday life, like how my intention to show up as my most authentic version of myself, like that's just paramount.
Absolutely. I am a firm believer. I say it all the time. Energy follows intention. So mm-hmm. where you're going to place that intention is where your energy is going to follow.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Do you find that, because I know that like you do a relationship and sexuality expert, but I imagine you have a lot of people that are coming to you that maybe they're not in a relationship. Maybe they want to learn how to love themselves, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. And it's like, what do you have, like maybe a transformational story that you can say, share about one of your clients that maybe was struggling and now they're thriving?
Yeah. One of the woman that comes to mind, I actually talk about her in my book. And it's like the mirror, if you know mirror work in the book. So if you've read my book, you're going to read my book.
I'm going to read her book.
Woman, it's a real person. And she was single when she met me and she was really trying to have a better relationship with herself, which I do. You know, a lot of people think that a relationship expert only focuses on like two people relationships, but it's really about your relationship with yourself. And she was so disconnected from who she was and didn't even realize how much she really hated herself.
Oh, and so that's sad. I'm so sorry.
I know, it is really sad, but a lot of people do, and they don't even realize it. It's like, that's the standard. And it doesn't come from a bad place, but it comes from a place of protection.
Right.
Like that part of you that like thinks you're so awful and you're so unworthy is because it's really trying to keep you safe because you've been hurt by so many people in the past. And so being aware of that, of why people despise themselves, it's not because they have done terrible things or they think that they really are crappy people. They want to stop being in pain and stop being hurt by others.
So how is she now?
She's amazing. Like I talk to her probably like two or three times a year, like doing what I call like maintenance checkups or sessions, but she'll send me messages on Instagram and which I love. I love when clients or, you know, readers will reach out to me and she's like, she just will send me like a random gratitude. Like, I'm so thankful. Like this came up in my life and I had the ability to work through it because of our work together. And I know, right. It's the best. It's the best feeling. So
that just, I mean, it fills you with so much joy to know that you've been able to really help somebody that like you hate themselves. That's so sad. And now they're thriving. They're empowered. They're in gratitude. And you brought that up a couple of times, having an attitude of gratitude.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a real base for a lot of any type of practice. How would you recommend somebody going into a gratitude practice?
So you can make it as easy or as complicated as you want, but like one of the, like what my husband does is he sets a timer on his phone like twice a day. And it's just like, oh, that's my alarm. I need to like really ground myself in gratitude. And that's it. I just need to think of something that I'm grateful for. Yeah. And it's become, it is like completely changed his attitude and his outlook, and which I'm really grateful for. Yeah. And so you can do that. You can do journaling. Like some people will do that first thing in the morning. Some people will do the last, like right before they go to bed, they'll think of like five things that they were grateful for that day. Mm. I'm a big fan of sprinkling things. So I like throughout your day or like, you know, once a day or whatever, not usually for me at the end of the day, I'm just like done. So it's not authentic for me to be grateful at the end of the day, but if you start your morning off with maybe one thing that you're looking forward to, even if it's a quote, a tough day, you know, like I'm just grateful that there's coffee downstairs, or I'm just grateful that like, I know that it's going to be sunny today, you know, whatever.
No, it could, like you said, if you're having a tough day, one simple thing can really, it'll shift the entire day. So I know that you brought this up before about having like a pleasure practice. Mm-hmm. So in the book, you talk about establishing a pleasure practice. Could you maybe shed a light on what that entails and why it's essential for women to prioritize and men pleasure in their lives.
Yeah, I think that the more connected anybody is to their pleasure, that the more connected they are to their power. Mm. And the more powerful that you feel and you are in who you are, not in external things, the mm-hmm. more authentic and more connected to your purpose that you are. So I like to say a powerful woman or a pleasured woman is a powerful woman, and powerful women can change the world. And it's something I super totally believe in. So what's a pleasure practice? It's essentially what we discussed earlier. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's finding things that bring you pleasure. And if you can't find something, like start with an app, start with like smelling the lotion that you put on your hands, start with like savoring the food that you eat when you sit down, you know, just like really tune into your senses and into sensuality. And that will lead you to the things that are bring you pleasure. And you do that once a day, once a week, and you build that just like mm-hmm. you would with exercise or gratitude or anything else. Yeah. And you have a pleasure practice.
That is amazing. So I want to, this is what her book looks like. So Not Tonight, Honey, Why Women Actually Don't Want Sex and What We Can Do About It. It is on Amazon. Are there any other places that you can pick up this book at?
Yeah, the I think Barnes & Noble, Apple Books, there's a just
probably everywhere.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of non-European ones. yeah, pretty most like major players. I don't think it's a Target. Yeah, but most people will defer to Amazon. If there is anyone who has a local bookstore, I would love for it to be in like small, you know, local bookstores. Yeah. It's just hasn't been, I haven't been in Europe, makes it a little bit difficult to make that happen. So
I'm trying to think like, I am in Saratoga Springs and there is a bookstore right on our main street. So I am going to go there and see if it's there. I'm awesome. I'll be so excited. I'll have to post it. I'll be so excited.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. Do you do any, do you have any coaching programs, or if anybody's interested to work with you, are people able to do that? And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I work with individuals and with couples. Nice. And right now what I'm doing is creating what are called sexual empowerment weekends. Ooh. First, they'll start out with women, and then I'll move over to couples as well. But this is essentially just a weekend where we take a lot of the things that are talked about in the book, but we really go deep. And so people who are struggling with desire, who are struggling with connecting to their pleasure, this will be like a boot camp weekend for them to be like, okay, like, yeah, I need to really take back this idea of being a sexual being and creating a sex life that works for me. So that is what is forthcoming. But if somebody's interested in that, they can message me to get on a wait list. Or if they're interested in doing a one-on-one weekend that's like an intensive, mm-hmm. they can message me or email me and we can coordinate that.
Do they have to be in person or can they be over Zoom?
That's a good question. So the weekends were like the small group ones mm-hmm. are in person. I have not considered doing them online for one-on-one. I would say that if somebody, I would prefer to do in person, but if somebody is really, well, that'll be a case by case. We can, I'm very open-minded, so we can be open for discussion.
I love that. So the next chapter, so your work mm-hmm. and your book has already made a significant impact on many women. What's next for you? Are there any new projects or areas of research that you're currently exploring?
You know, one thing that I have been really excited about is mm-hmm. the response from men who have read the book and just their like insight and takeaways. And so I think that's kind of like a next step for me is doing some research on like how women's low desire and then within relationships and creating tools for men so that they mm-hmm. feel empowered, like they can like learn how to communicate. There was one reader who reached out to me and said that her husband was reading the book in bed next to her. And he turned to her because he was at a point in the book about talking about body image. And mm-hmm. he asked her and said, "Do you love your body?" And she said, "No, I don't." And they had been married for like 13 years. Yeah. He had like the idea of her not loving her body was so foreign to him. And he just was like, how is that possible? You gave birth to two beautiful babies and like, you look amazing. And she's like, I don't hate it anymore, but like, I'm more like neutral towards it. Mm-hmm. And just like the conversation that they had because of what he had read, like, I don't know if it would change their marriage, but it definitely was a good, you know, chats that they had. So,
I mean, it sounds like if anything, it opened up his perspective to what her struggle has been, you know, which would give him deeper understanding to maybe how he approaches conversations with her.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's very powerful.
Yeah. It was. It's one of my favorite stories. Yeah.
I love that story. I'm like, I'm going to give it to my partner. Yes, ma'am. Just
move it on over. Yep.
Like, sir.
Yep.
Courtney, thank you so much for coming to the Spiritual Spotlight series. I am so excited to read your book. I've already purchased it during this interview. And
thanks.
Thank you again so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope that you found the episode to be enlightening and insightful. Our goal is to create content that not only entertains, but also helps you grow spiritually and connect with your inner self. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, we would greatly appreciate if you could take a moment to like, subscribe, and write a review. Your feedback is incredibly valuable to us and helps us to improve the quality of our content and to reach a wider audience. We believe that by sharing knowledge and insights about spirituality, we can help inspire positive change and personal growth. So if you found our podcast to be meaningful and informative, we encourage you to share it with your friends and family. Thank you once again for your support and for joining us on this journey of self-discovery and spiritual growth. We look forward to sharing more episodes with you in the future.